Welcome, everyone, and thanks for joining us for another Underground Online Seminar 2 follow-up phone call. This time is number three out of four, and we have Nanette Miner, Ryan Lee, Mr. X, and Joshua Ryder on the line for you guys today. We're going to follow up and interrogate them a little bit more, and I have Nanette Miner on first. Nanette, you're there?
I am. Thank you, Yannick.
Excellent. Wanted to... ask you a couple questions, follow up from DC. A couple people came up to me and said, Nanette's stuff is really, really cool because I was selling services and I never even knew I could do all the stuff that she was doing. So thanks again for appearing there.
Great, thank you.
So here's the first question. This is actually from an attendee, and they ask, when you don't have a client list or any speaking appearances to build off of, what's the best way to get started selling high-priced services or to approach potential clients?
Well, a couple of avenues, which I did all successfully, and I guess it kind of depends on how fast you want to be known in your industry, but I started the first probably 4 years by subcontracting under other people who already had those connections. So at least it got me a foot in the door. I got in front of the clients. I got to, be in their sphere of influence, so to speak. And, half the battle, or more than half the battle, is doing good work. So long as I do good work, the clients tend to like me. And then, for instance, Pitney Bowes was a huge client in the early 90s, and I got in there being a subcontractor to someone else in my field, and then they went back to her and said, we have a new project, and she said, I can't do it, why don't you call Nanette? And they called me, and from there on they were my client, because if you're a consultant and you turn down work, they go on to the next one.
Right.
So in the beginning, I the first 3 or 4 years, it was just by subcontracting with people in the field who had those contacts when I didn't, and doing good work and staying in the client's good graces.
And how do you find someone to subcontract for?
Well, that was through networking, my professional associations, belonging to the right professional groups that support my industry, and letting people know what I did and that I was available, and when they had extra work, if they would bring me in. And so, it's grunt work in the beginning, but at least it's a steady paycheck.
Right.
and you're establishing great contacts. The other thing that I did very successfully was go back to past clients, or if you're just starting out, go to people in your professional associations, your sphere of influence, etc. And I stole this idea from multi-level marketing. They have like a thing they call like Team 90 or something like that. And the idea is, when you join a multi-level marketing company, you're supposed to take somebody to breakfast or lunch every day for 90 days and explain the program to them. And by the end of that 90 days, you're supposed to have enough of a downline that you could actually make a living through your multi-level marketing product or service. So I adopted that strategy for myself and just started to take people out to breakfast or lunch once a week. I couldn't afford it calorie-wise nor monetarily to take somebody out every day. But I just kind of went back through my whole list of contacts over the years and started making calls in like January of whatever year it was. And it was kind of cool because I would say to people, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. I'd like to get together with you and update you on what I'm doing and kind of clients I'm looking for, et cetera. And right now I'm scheduling lunches in March. Would you be available in March? So it sounded like I was really busy, which, basically I had already had lunches scheduled January and February, but it sounded like, wow, she can't even fit me in until March. And I did that for 90 days and I had to stop, because just getting in front of people again, they felt kind of obligated to you. You took them out to lunch. I would let them talk for the first 50 minutes, and then just before the end of the hour, I'd say, well, here's a new brochure. I've done a lot of things since I last saw you. I wanted to let you know my new capabilities, the kind of clients I'm looking for, and if you know of anything, I'd really appreciate the referral. And in 90 days, I was so inundated with work that I stopped that practice.
That's pretty cool. Let me get your take on you probably either did this early on in your career, and I saw, I want to know what you do now, and this is completely my own question, but I think a lot of people benefit from it, is networking. How did you do it originally? What's your thoughts on it? And then now, how do you keep in contact with these high-level decision makers?
Well, in the beginning, it was just joining the professional associations that were associated with my industry. And so it is a lot of schmoozing and, hand clapping in the beginning, because if you want to have people know your name, you have to attend. You have to go to the monthly meetings or the weekly meetings, and I belong to a lot of associations. I was not only attending all the meetings, but I also became very active because I'm one of those people that thinks that if you take, you should give as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would join the membership committee or I'd help to plan a conference or something. And so you start to know the movers and the shakers in that professional association. You know, usually, strangely, the people who give more of their time are usually the more successful people. You'd think they'd be have the least amount of time to to give, but I have always found that it's the people who are very successful who are also giving back to their profession. So, you know, you start to be able to hobnob with those folks as well. But how do I maintain it now? I'm kind of lackadaisical about it now. In fact, I've dropped out of most of my professional associations because now the whole networking referral list comes from my own client base.
And how do you keep in touch with like your high level CEOs or clients who hire you now?
Well, a couple of years ago, probably 3 or 4 years ago, I decided that I was going to, no, more than 3 or 4 years ago, but I decided my earlier strategy was to market to the Fortune 500 because most of my clients are Fortune 100 clients. But then I realized that's kind of just like running an ad in the paper or, you know, if you just send a letter. I mean, when they come to me, what are the chances of me going, oh, yeah, this is exactly what I need right now? So that strategy did not work that well. And instead what I decided to do was to just market to the people who've been my past clients. So I have a very small marketing list of like 42 to 50 people, and I send them little gifts every month. There's 15th anniversary pens going out next month. I've sent them fish tanks with fake fish in them. On my 12th anniversary, I sent them donut boxes and certificates for a dozen donuts, which strangely a lot of people called and said, I don't get it. I'm like, 12 years, dozen donuts. That was odd. But hey, you know, it made the phone ring. I have a book coming out next month, so I'll get a copy of my book. So I hammer in a nice way. I'm just constantly giving gifts and reminding my current and past clients, you know, probably the clients that I've serviced in the last 4 years or so.
And every month.
Still around. Every month, yep.
Yeah, that's cool. That's
a
great
thing.
Yeah, that's a nice strategy. I like that.
One of the things I just got that I think are very cool are business calling cards. They're 60-minute calling cards,
mm-hmm.
but they look just like my business card on one side, and then the other side is, you know, call this 800 number and use this PIN code.
Ah, so they're not going to throw away your business card.
Exactly, yeah. They're really nice.
I like that. All right, another attendee question. How would you suggest qualifying potential niches for selling high-priced services for those of us who could focus on several but need to select one and focus?
Well, my first response would be, why focus? If you can focus, if you can serve several, why not? I don't just have the training doctor, and I asked you months ago, do you want me to talk about all my businesses? And you said, no, just concentrate on the one. But truly, I specialize in about three different niches, and it's one of the ways to constantly have a stream of income. So I would say why specialize if you don't have to? But if you really want to do that, you really, really need to know the industry. You need to know that it can support those high-priced services. You need to kind of get like the industry reports, you know, what's the average amount of, like in my case, workplace training. What's the average amount of training they spend per head on you know, educating somebody in the workforce? And what's the average instructional design budget? How much of their budgets do they outsource on an annual basis? And those kind of things. So you need to know that you're concentrating in a niche that could actually afford you. And then also you need to know that you can reach the decision makers. So you either have to, you know, get in front of them in terms of being in their industry publications, their trade publications, their like lists of consultants. There's two training and development organizations that have basically referral programs. You know, it's just one of them is called the Buyer's Guide. So for $700, you take an ad out in the Buyer's Guide, and then you're one of the few people that if somebody finds that association and says, gee, I need somebody who can do instructional design, you're one of the few people, you know, associated with it because you're the one who took out the ad. So then you get in front of the decision makers that way because they're the ones who are looking to spend money.
Right.
And then the last thing that I would suggest is be very selective when you design your website and only use the keywords that you know will bring you the right people to begin with. And I spoke about this in March, and it just proved itself again this past week or so.
Tell us about that.
Well, I got an inquiry from a client in Las Vegas who I was just working with this past week, like only 3 weeks ago. And they put a project out to bid. I was up against two other people. I won the project. I went out there and worked with them. And yesterday we happened to be talking about the competition and, you know, who did I win out against and what was it about my proposal that convinced them. And finally I said to them, what words did you use when you searched for for me, and they said instructional design. And I said, exactly, that's what I want, somebody who knows they need instructional design. I don't want somebody who knows they want training, because training is too big.
Right.
So instructional design is the niche within training that I am in. And if I have an educated consumer who's educated enough to know that that's the word they have to search on, then that's half the battle for me. So I'd be very, very selective in the keywords I use, so that at least you're getting highly qualified prospects.
Okay, very good. Let's talk about teleseminars.
Okay.
And, you know, in your presentation, you talked about that, and you mentioned, correct me if I'm wrong, but you do 4 topics throughout the year?
Correct.
And do they stay the same? Do they change? How do you
pick those?
They're
always the same. They're always the same. I'm a person that likes, you know, if it works well, just keep repeating it. So there are 4 topics. There are topics that I would probably be considered an industry expert in. One is the evaluation of training. One is how to create fair tests and certifications. If you're going to do training and then test people at the end, there's a lot of legal ramifications to that. One is how to do consultative needs analysis, and I actually forget what the 4th one is. How to design training for a workplace audience. So they are the same 4 classes. They are always presented in the same order. They are either delivered every other week or once a month, depending on my schedule. They're always delivered from 3 to 4:30 p.m. on a Tuesday. It's just very lockstep.
And is it live all the time?
It's live, yep.
Okay. So have you ever tried out pre-recording?
No. No, because I use it as a sales opportunity. So I'm not sure that, you know, listening to me recorded is going to allow you to have a dialogue with me and ask me those questions and go, oh, yeah, she is the person that I need to bring in here.
So is there the sales process will be at the end then when you just allow open Q&A?
Well, you know, there really is no sales process. It's open Q&A, absolutely. Because I'm not a salesperson, and I've been saying that for years, because people say to me all the time, wow, you're so good at this sales. I'm like, no, I'm not. I don't know how to do sales. I know how to do marketing. But to me, sales is really asking for a sale or closing, and I just don't know how to do that. So my approach to selling is educating the buyer. And I think so long as I give enough education, people go, wow, she's really smart. I need to have her on my team.
And so you don't hold anything back when you're doing these teleseminars?
In terms of what?
I don't know, like a
self-promotion?
No, like a real critical piece to the puzzle. They go and do what you're teaching them to do, or what you would be hired to do by themselves if they left the call?
Let's just think about it for a second, Yannick. It's only 90 minutes. You know, so I mean, I'm not holding anything back, but by the same token, I'm given so much information, you probably couldn't do it on your own.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't hammer in anything, but of course there's the whole, I've been doing this for 15 years, I have advanced degrees in this topic, especially like when I'm talking about certifications and tests, I'm like, you have to be really, really careful in this area, you probably want to talk to your legal department, this could get you into hot water if you give a bunch of trainees a test and you say there's a cutoff grade and if you don't pass it, you don't get a promotion, somebody's going to sue you. If you don't have that, you know, legally locked down that, well, they have to know this or they can't do the job. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I give them a lot of information, but it's tinged with a lot of, you know, you probably don't want to do this on your own.
Right. Now, do you ever have success stories or anything like that on the call with you live?
No, a client on the call, that's a cool idea, no. But I do talk about client situations all the time, and, you know, here's a principle, here's a fact, let me tell you how that would work in real life, let me tell you about a client that I had this exact same problem with, so you don't repeat it. So I'm, you know, constantly bringing up client stories.
Right.
But I've
yep.
never had a client with me. That's a cool idea.
Yeah, you should try that.
I should try that.
That would definitely work.
You.
But you're doing it right with the case studies and so on, because that obviously works for them. What's when you get people on the phone, do you have a certain percentage that you expect will sign up for services?
No. Nope. I don't even care. You know, as I told you all in March, I don't track any of that kind of stuff. I just figure what goes around comes around, and eventually either they'll come back or they'll refer me to somebody else.
Okay. Then do you work from a script, or is it just all outline, or
it's
is it
completely scripted? Completely.
Every
scripted.
Word for word.
Word for word. Yep. And the stories are not. You know, I'll put a little arrow that says, you know, tell this story here. But the actual content is word for word. They get a workbook. It's somewhere between like 19 and 20 pages, depending on how verbose I was when I created it. And we follow the workbook word for word, but then I illustrate everything with a story about a client.
Uh-huh. And is it a, like, fill-in-the-blank workbook, or is it, I don't think, did you give anyone a, you didn't give an example of that?
No, I didn't. No, it's basically, you know, like an e-book.
Okay. And it's just pretty much what the teleseminar is, but it's nothing for them interactive to do while they're on the phone.
No, quite honestly, the workbook for the teleseminar goes out the day in advance, and if you had enough initiative and read that, you wouldn't come to the call, quite honestly.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's talk about webinars then. What's your preference? Teleseminars, webinars, what's the pros and cons for either one?
Yeah, I don't have a preference. It's almost apples and oranges. It depends on what you're really trying to achieve. Teleseminars are obviously a whole lot easier because you don't need any kind of internet infrastructure. And there's a couple of free conference call services that I use out there, so I don't even need a teleconference service. So basically, you know, for the cost of a long-distance call, which is nothing these days, I can conduct a teleseminar from anywhere.
Is that what you're doing, by the way, or is it with the free conference call?
Yeah, free conference call.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. And then do you record ever and send CDs off to people?
No,
that...
never.
Never.
Nope. It's definitely a live interaction. You know, you get 90 minutes with the expert on this topic.
And you don't make it too bad.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, and then for webinars, you were saying, sorry, I cut you off.
Well, but, you know, a webinar requires internet access, and I travel a lot, so a teleseminar is a whole lot easier because I can just pop into any room and make a one-hour phone call, but to make sure that I have an internet connection, which, quite honestly, the last three trips I've taken, I've been in internet hell on every trip. I just have not been able to get good connection. So, you know, that can kind of screw up your business plan or your marketing plan if you can't ensure that you're going to have a good connection when you travel. But the reason that they're apples to oranges is because the teleseminars are really quick hit, 90 minutes, listen to me spout off about what I'm expert about, ask me a bunch of questions. You can also send me questions in advance via email, and up to a week later via email if something dawned on you and you're like, well, gee, how would that really work in my workplace? I give you that access as well. The webinars I use for really a curriculum. I'm really ingraining you in a topic. You have homework assignments. You have to send them to me. I grade them and send them back before the next class, and so that's what I reserve the webinars for, is much more like a class, as opposed to the teleseminars, which I see more as like a marketing seminar that you don't know you're coming to. You don't know you're being – it's my lost leader. You don't know you're coming to a marketing seminar, but you are.
Are you doing all your teleseminars paid?
Yes, yes, $59.
Okay.
And if you don't show up, too bad.
And webinars paid, too?
Yes, $399.
Okay.
For a 4-week class.
Have you done free teleseminars? Have you tried that?
No, I never have.
Because
I think free teleseminars attract the masses. I really don't want the masses.
Mm-hmm. And the $59, I mean, how does do you do anything interesting, like let them have $59 that's applied towards your services, or I guess it's such a pittance compared
to
what
you charge? It's a pittance. It's just enough to make them show up.
Uh-huh.
You know, because a lot of people sign up for free stuff, and then they're like, they blow it off because, I didn't pay anything. At least
right.
This way I make $59, you'll probably show up.
Right. Any other strategies for the teleseminars or webinars that are really innovative or that people should know about?
I don't think I do anything innovative. The only thing that I do is really plan them ahead. Like, I just finished the teleseminar series last week, and so I just sent my webmaster a list of, okay, in September, October, November, December, here's the topics, here's the dates. So I start promoting them well in advance. They're always in my monthly newsletter. They're available on the website. The presence that I create, I think, shows long-term and, you know, sustainability, that the training doctor will always be there. Like next November, they already have stuff scheduled. But I don't think that's groundbreaking.
That's interesting. And how far advanced do you plan out your promotions and your, you know, just teleseminars and all the different things?
Like 6 months in advance. I basically do a spring schedule and a fall schedule.
Okay.
So I take the summers off. July and August, I don't offer anything like that.
July and August, you take off completely?
Yeah, and December usually as well.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I like that. All right, what about for the webinars? I know people were pretty intrigued by that. And you mentioned a couple of resources for people. So those are really educational with the homework, like you mentioned. Are you pushing PowerPoint? Are you doing anything else during those webinars?
Yes. Well, they utilize PowerPoint as your visual medium. So, yeah. And, in fact, I have two sources because people kind of put me on the spot back in March about, you know, what's actually the product name that you use. And because I run a classroom, and I don't think this ever came out, but I was a former college professor, so it's kind of ingrained in me to do things this way. Because I run a classroom, I use a classroom platform, which is a whole lot more expensive than if you were to just give a 90-minute webinar and you wanted to, you know, show PDFs or something. And,
uh-huh.
And you know, basically, if you wanted to give a webinar the way I give a teleseminar, you don't want a $20,000 product. There's a product called Citrix GoToMeeting. Citrix is the name of the company, and their product is called GoToMeeting. I did not get their price, but basically it's a very easy-to-use visual classroom, your internet-based classroom, and the other one is called Illuminate, E-L-L-U-M-I-N-A-T-E, and they have a 10-person, what they call a classroom, for 500 bucks.
Can you spell that last one again?
E-L-L-U-M-I-N-A-T-E, Illuminate.
Okay.
All right, is their product is called Illuminate Light, so you can only invite 10 people, but, you know, 10 people at $399 is...
worth as much.
Not bad. That's right.
Yeah, it'll be a good day.
Yes. Yeah, if you're only paying, I mean, it's an unlimited license for, you know, it's a license for a year at $500. I mean, you make that back in your first webinar, I would think, so.
Right. Okay, let's talk about the, you know, you've done a lot with positioning, I think, yourself in the marketplace, especially like we talked about being the high-end provider, or I don't know how conscious you are of trying to be the highest-end provider.
Highest end in terms of price?
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm not. In fact, these fellows that I was just talking with yesterday and asked, you know, who did I win out against my competition, I was the lowest priced of the three that they were looking at.
Oh, really?
But it's still a substantial amount of money. And one of the reasons, one of the vendors that they chose not to go with is because he dropped his price by $20,000 as soon as they gave an objection. And they were like, so what was that original price based on? So you may remember in March I said I never drop my price. Never, never, never. It's calculated, and there's a reason I came up with this price. And if you can't afford it, I'm sorry.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so what I wanted to find out was about your positioning in the marketplace and how you think the newsletters, teleseminars, webinars, articles, all that work for your positioning. And is that a pretty conscious thing that you're thinking of?
Yes, it's a very conscious thing because I had a vice president of some huge insurance company once come up to me and say, oh, I see your name everywhere. And at that time, I was writing like one regular column for a business journal. But as long as he thought he saw my name everywhere, that was good. So, you know, yeah, I absolutely try to stay in the public purview all the time. And not Nanette Miner. You may remember I said that too. It's always a training doctor because, first of all, nobody can spell Nanette, so they'll never find me again. The training doctor is a catchy name. It's cute. It's easy. People will remember it. And I don't want to necessarily have to do the work. I want to be able to subcontract it out if I can. So anything I do is always promoting the training doctor. But, yeah, I think it's very conscious that I'm constantly doing marketing. I mean, that's what my colleagues say to me all the time, my consulting friends are always like, you are so good at this marketing, you just walk the talk all the time. But you have to. The problem with most consultants is you get busy, you stop marketing.
Right. It's like a fluctuating roller coaster.
Right, which is why everything's on my calendar way in advance. There's no way I'm canceling a teleseminar. There's no way I'm canceling a webinar. There's no way I'm not writing this article for the first Tuesday of every month or whatever. It absolutely has to be done because if I ever take off, I know I'm going to go out of business.
How proactive are you once every week? How many proactive activities are you doing?
I bet you 10 hours worth. I mean, I don't know how many activities, but I bet you I invest 10 hours a week into non-paid, making sure I'm contacting people, writing an article, setting up conference calls, you know, teleseminar conference calls with subject matter experts or something. Probably 10 hours a week of not expecting any pay, just doing something to market the business.
Something to move you forward and move the training doctor forward, rather.
Right.
And you said that everything's marketing as a training doctor. Are you doing subcontracting work now, too?
Am I a subcontractor to
others? No, are you subcontracting other
stuff
people?
Out? Yeah, absolutely.
And how are you fine now that you've become, you know, like it's been 15 years, you're well known in the industry. How do you find a good subcontractor?
They find me. Just like the clients do, they find me. I probably twice a month I get an inquiry via my website. Are you looking for subcontractors? I specialize in this area. I live here. I'm like, absolutely. I'll take everybody's resume. So, in fact, I'm starting a huge project July 1, and I'm just getting a whole bunch of people up to speed now that I'll just manage them.
Interesting. And do you have a qualification process? Or is it all resume-based?
Resume, and I like to see samples of their work because I know the way that I work, and so I want people that work the same way I do. Like, I met with a woman a couple of years ago who showed me samples of her work, and honestly, I could have created it. It looked so much like the kind of stuff that I would have done. It was amazing. And I said, okay, you're hired. Because this is a person I know I can hand off a project to, and it's going to come out looking exactly like I want it to look like.
Okay, excellent. One of the things that you mentioned in March was on your website was persona, persona, persona.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly is that, and how do you really illuminate that in the corporate world?
Well, again, it's just it's marketing the training doctor and not an individual because, I mean, how many people want to do business with a one-person company? I mean, that's kind of risky. What if I break my leg or get hit by a car? I mean, their whole project could go down the tube. So I try not to ever let people know, at least in the initial stages, that they're dealing with a single individual. The website is, I think, very corporate-looking. As I explained in March, you know, it's very sparse in terms of a lot of text, a lot of bullet points. It's that you can get in and out, get the information you need very quickly. So I think it looks like what a corporate reader wants to see.
Okay.
And so I model myself after what I think they expect to see.
Okay, but persona doesn't mean injecting your own personality like the way John Onis was with.
No, in my world, persona is the image that you're just projecting to the world, and in my frame of reference, it's a corporate image.
Yeah. Okay, that makes perfect sense. Any other additional tips, tricks that we didn't hear about in DC that are cool?
Well, you're putting me on the spot.
Nothing
I can think of. Sorry about that. No, nothing I can think of.
Nothing. Okay, nothing too new and exciting that comes to mind. That's fine. All right, Nanette, thank you very much. I think that was very good. Let me see if Mr. X is on the line.
I am here, Yannick.
All right, thank you, Nanette.
Okay, take care.
Appreciate it. Bye. Mr. X.
Mr. Silver. By the way, can I just give you a little plug, Yannick?
Sure.
That I just got back last night from Yannick's first mastermind meeting. I was one of the attendees there, and it was really good stuff. It was great to be surrounded by 18 highly motivated other internet entrepreneurs. So it was very good, Yannick.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, it was a very, very good group we got there. And,
yeah, for those of you who didn't sign up, when he offers the next group, definitely take advantage of it.
That's right.
And I don't get paid for saying that.
That's right. Check's in the mail for you. all right. Mr. X, were you number three in the voting?
Two.
Number
oh,
three.
You're trying to knock me down already.
I don't remember.
No, I remember. And I lost by four votes. You think I'm going to forget that? I'm very competitive, Yannick.
All right. Well, I got some questions for you, some attendee questions, and I got my own for you.
Okay.
First attendee question is, Ryan, have you ever tested which converted better between a long-form sales letter and the article-driven copy on the homepage of your membership sites?
Yes. I initially used to go with the long sales letter, mm-hmm. and once I changed over to the article-driven type copy, I don't know the exact number, but it was about a 50% increase.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I know.
And
I was actually shocked, too. It did surprise me. I thought, because I've always been told, oh, the long sales letter is the way to go, but it was like 50% better.
Huh. And have you heard from other people? So you're pretty involved in the membership community. Have you heard from other people the results are similar?
Yeah, I don't know how many, because I know a lot of people obviously use the MemberGate software, most of them don't use the long sales letter. And everyone I've spoke to I know is doing well with the article type format, and I know there's an internet marketing guy who used to use the long sales letter. He used to be a very popular site, and then he switched over to the article-driven. I haven't found out, though, what his results have been.
Right.
But I would imagine it's better,
yeah,
article-driven.
If he's keeping it like that, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting. And now, did those articles change? They rotate automatically? Or
You can rotate automatically. What I do is, you know, I update my sites all the time. So most of the sites are updated every week. So on the homepage, you're always going to find new articles and new content on there, which is also good for search engine placements, keeping the site fresh. You know, some people, and I've played around a little bit with sometimes you can keep one or two featured articles on the homepage and then rotate the other ones. When I tried it, though, it didn't work as well for me for some reason.
When
I kept the same three featured articles on the homepage and then rotated the others, it just didn't work as well. And I don't know if that was because people kept coming back to see if there was new content added, and since the first three were the same, maybe they thought it was getting stale. I don't know. But I've just – and I send out – I do a lot of marketing through my newsletters, so people are getting the newsletter every week. They're seeing it updated every week, so they see it's a you know, living, breathing site that's always – has the latest information.
You know, that's interesting because you know who Bottom Line Boardroom Reports is, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, their direct mail pieces, they change a little bit, but they use, you know, roughly the same bullet points, like, you know, what never to eat on an airplane and so on. And, you know, it would seem, okay, if the long-form sales letter might not have worked as effectively, but it would seem like the bullet points for the articles, which are the most intriguing and the biggest hot buttons for people, if those stayed the same, like those would sell over and over again. But what you're saying with the...
Yeah, with mine, it hasn't been that way. And I, you know, what's also happening is because I'm always adding new articles and new things are getting caught in the search engine. So if I have 1 month, 1 week, it, you know, maybe the lead article is about improving your speed. The next week it could be about, you know, baseball, you know, improving
right.
your performance for baseball. So it's getting caught in the engines as well. But I'm, you know, there are certain articles that, you know, if I update, let's say I add three new articles a week, I always make sure the top article, the very first one, is always the strongest. I'm very conscious of that. I plan out ahead of time which three I'm going to update the least. What I think would be the least effective or has the least power, I would put, you know, last, and then I'd kind of work my way up and always try to go with the most powerful one. And then I test a lot, you know, seeing an article with a still image, an article with one of my animated GIF files, just an article headline without any graphics, you know, seeing what topics tend to pull best.
Uh-huh.
So I'm always kind of tweaking that to see. And sometimes it could be, you know, 100% more signups with using a certain type of headline.
Yeah, you mean the title of the article, or
yeah, the title of the article, and also, and I call it a headline because really,
that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and just that's the thing, because people think if it's article driven, oh, you know, you're not writing good sales copy, but every word in the headline of the article, in the description of the article, is sales copy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't write generic title. I mean, the authors give me pretty boring titles, but I, you know, they may say, you know, the 6-week bench press program, but I'll say, you know, how to crush the 225 bench press by 80%, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that tends to work pretty well. So you still have to write the good sales copy. It's just a different format.
Yeah, like I'm looking at one of the articles here on Sports Specific, which is the four best foot speed, agility, and quickness drills for tennis and all court sports. I mean, that seems like probably something you had your hand in.
I actually, the one thing I do, I write every headline. So you can see now the ultimate 8-point jump training plyometric progression. And if you're an athlete or a trainer, plyometric, like, you want to know about that. And,
right.
Yeah, the sport. How to use sled training to dramatically improve speed and acceleration. The ultimate body weight training guide for sports. So I write all that sales copy. That's one of the things I don't want to outsource, because I think that's my strength, and I know the audience really well.
Yeah, that's powerful. That those little tips right there are really powerful for people to pick up on. Okay, yeah, if you go to an article-driven membership site, it doesn't have to be a boring article. And even if it's a semi-benefit-oriented title, like how-to, whatever, it still might not be as good as what you're saying to really tweak it.
Yeah, make it powerful. You know, I use the analogies a lot of magazines on the bookshelves, and that's, if you look at their cover, they don't have boring titles.
Right.
You know, if it's a fitness magazine, you know, summer washboard abs now, you know,
yeah.
The 9 foods to never eat or you're going to get love handles. I mean, whatever the kind of stuff they have. So they have really powerful, and that's what I try to emulate my headlines after, the article titles.
Yep.
So even if other people write it in, write your articles, you can always, you know, change the headline.
Yeah, very smart.
Which I do.
Okay.
I'm a very smart man.
I would concur. All right. If another attendee question. If you're starting a membership site from scratch today and didn't have other relevant lists to market to, so, for example, your different fitness sites, how would you start? And would you suggest a free forum first and let people know it's becoming a paid site, or would you start with the paid site immediately?
I would start paid immediately.
Mm-hmm.
When I converted it over to paid, it was tough. You know, I had people who'd been on for years who were kind of annoyed. They're like, oh, why are you making it paid? And some people had signed up right away, and initially my paid content used to be free. And they're like, why did I pay? It's the same content that used to be for free. So I did kind of annoy some people at first. So I personally think now it's just easier just to make it paid. You know, if you want to have some parts of it that are free, that people can see some free articles, some free interviews, to get a taste of it. But I would start paid. I just unless you're obviously going to go a membership site, but you're not charging, unless you're doing it, you know, free content and using the Tim Carter method and just making money through AdSense.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's a whole different animal. But
right.
I'd go, if you want to generate membership revenue, I would start paid.
Just right from the get-go. Now, what if you have any suggestions for someone that, let's say they got a free email list. Let's say they got, I don't know, like actually a lot of people in our group, well, a handful, so we have some people that have huge lists too. But let's say there's people with like 8, 9, 10,000 people on their list,
mm-hmm.
and they want to start creating a membership site. And it's going to be, you know, in the same genre of their topic, but not the exact same stuff they give away for free. What do you think the first couple steps would be?
So it's, is it, like, give me an example.
Well, like let's say, well, let's just mention someone from our group. We'll give him free advice. Randy Kale.
Okay.
Who had the terrific parenting site.
That's right.
And I don't remember the exact number on his website, but he doesn't have, like, 500,000 subscribers. I think it was in the, I don't know, 8, 9, 10,000 range.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wants to do a membership site now for parents, let's say.
Okay.
What do you think the first couple steps would be?
In terms of figuring out what content to put on there?
Well, how to do it, because if, you know, people are used to getting the stuff for free,
yep.
but now you're going to be giving them, I guess, better content in the paid site.
Yeah, it's if they've been used to getting it for free, and now all of a sudden you can convert it to paid, you really have to give them a very good reason to join. And if, you know, in Randy's case, what I would do is make sure, you know, one of the benefits of joining is having some type of access to him. I think that would be something, because he can't really give that away for free to everyone. He would never have enough time. But if he says, hey, I have, you know, I'm launching a special, you know, he can call it, instead of a membership site, you know, taking a little piece from Dan Kennedy, you know, the inner circle,
uh-huh.
where you're going to get even more exclusive content, and then Randy will be on the forum once a day to answer all your questions. You know, this would usually, you know, he usually charges $500 an hour, and, you know, you start adding up all the prices for that. But I would make that part of it. You know, maybe at the beginning do some free telephone seminars for charter members. But I would make it very special in order to convert them. I wouldn't just take the exact same content he's been given for free
right.
and just all of a sudden make it paid. You have to make it special. And, you know, what I did at first was obviously taking the content, making it paid, but I did have that forum, and I did have the people had the ability to ask me questions, which I think is a big plus, because, you know, I know people, like, for example, for you, Yannick, if you had an online membership site, obviously a huge benefit is you saying, hey, I'm going to be there every day, and I'm going to be answering your questions.
Right.
That's huge. I mean, you know, people would pay $100-$200 a month just for that, just for you to answer, you know, hey, you know, I'm thinking of doing this type of headline. What do you think, Yannick? And you would say, yeah, I like that first one better. That's worth gold. And the same thing with Randy, where, you know, people have a parenting question. Hey, you know, my kid is constantly wetting the bed. You know, I really need a good strategy. What do you think?
Yeah, okay. So giving them different access, giving them new content that they can't get anywhere else. Anything else different that you would have done when you were starting to move from free to paid?
I probably would have put more video clips, at least on my site.
Right.
Because it's an exercise. It's very visual. I would have had more video clips.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. What else would I have done differently? I mean, when I first started, I used ClickBank. I had the yearly fee, so I used ClickBank to process it, which actually wasn't bad. But in terms of managing memberships, I used another free script, and it was just a nightmare.
Right.
So I would make sure you invest in a good system,
right?
A good membership system. And obviously, I use MemberGate, but there's a ton of other resources out there as well.
Okay, excellent. Another attendee is asking about, once we have an idea or a theory about a membership site niche, how would you go about statistically validating it before investing it, you know, beyond seeing if they're just magazines on the newsstands and things like that?
Well, obviously, yeah. Well, beyond seeing if they're magazines, that's my first litmus test.
That's number one.
Yeah. If there's no magazines on the stand, there's no magazines online anywhere, I'm probably not going to do it. That's one. You know, if you have currently a list and you're in the market, obviously you could survey your list,
mm-hmm.
say, hey, I'm thinking of doing a private inner circle, a membership site, where you'd have access to me, we'd have new articles, interviews, video clips, whatever. Is this something you guys would be interested in? If yes, what do you think would be a fair price? What would you feel comfortable paying? I would look at numbers, you know, depending on how expensive of a site you want to charge. You know, if there's only 10,000 people in your niche,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have to charge a lot of money.
And
you
plus,
know,
you're not going to get all 10,000 of them.
No, no, no. And that's a mistake people make, is they think, oh, I'm going to have a membership site, you know, even if I get 30% of the market. You know, you're not going to get 30% of them. It's really hard, especially there's so much. There is a lot of content. There are magazines. There's so many ways people turn to information for entertainment. There's a lot of competition. Don't be so cocky and think that once you put up a membership site, everyone's just going to be falling over just to get to it. I remember I had a basketball coach call me and said, you know, he's going to do a site for basketball coaches, and there's, I don't know, I don't remember the number, let's say 80,000 basketball coaches. And he said, you know, I think I can get like 80% of the market. And he was dead serious. And he's like, do you want to partner up? I said, no. I said, be honest, I don't think. He's like, no, I'm pretty, you know, I know a lot of coaches. And he said,
you know, 80% of them?
Yeah, exactly. And even if he knew 80%, you know, so you have to be realistic. You know, looking at what other competition there is, are there other people doing membership sites, trying to get a taste of what their numbers are? And if you can't find out somehow, at least doing some Alexa searches just to get an idea of traffic. I wish there was some type of exact formula that you could punch it in, say this number of people, this is what their income is, and this is whether it's worth doing a membership site. But
right.
You know, I look at it as, even if you go with an expensive software solution, if it's $2,000 or $3,000 or $5,000, you know, the cost to set up a membership site compared to other businesses and other business opportunities is so reasonable, especially if they let you do payment plans. I mean, think about 10 years ago, if you wanted to start a business, a retail store,
right.
You know, you're talking a couple hundred grand. I mean, you know, franchise fees are $25,000, $30,000. And, you know, even BizOps and the magazines could be, you know, $4,000 to start a gift basket business. So, when I first started, it was a lot for me, the couple thousand to invest in it. I hemmed and hawed over it for about 6 months until I finally decided to take the plunge. And I think I had hives because I was so nervous about it. But I still think if it's something you really think is going to work, you've done your research, there are magazines, you've done a survey of the list, you're going on the forums, you're making sure people have a lot of questions, you're looking at competition, are there competitors, do they have membership sites, really, really just getting, for at least a couple of months, completely absorbed in this market, talking to people who are influential in the market, talking to editors of magazines in the market, editors of websites, you should have a pretty good sense if it'll fly. And if you think it will, you know, life's short. Go for it.
Are editors of magazines, are they pretty accessible?
I found they are, especially for niche magazines.
Uh-huh.
If it's a, you know, obviously it's going to be tough to get a hold of, you know, the editor of Time magazine.
Right.
But if it's a niche market, you know, if you want to sell to, people who own video stores,
yeah,
you know,
okay.
and as a video store trade magazine, it probably wouldn't be too hard to get a hold of them.
And how do you approach them?
I've called
and just say, hey, I'm Ryan Lee, and I wanted to say hi.
Well, I would, you know, when I call now, I already have sites.
Yeah, now you have a lot of credibility, but
yeah.
If you're starting from considering the marketplace, would you just say, hi, I'm so-and-so, and I'm thinking about doing a site, or would you just say, hi, I'm so-and-so, looking for more information on this marketplace?
That's a good question. How would you, I mean, I guess there are a couple of different ways to approach it. One, you know, I guess a sneaky way is if you have someone else call and then you just tell them you're a potential advertiser and tell
right.
them to send some magazines and media kits, and you'll learn a lot about the market just from there,
yeah.
Income and all that kind of stuff, because they'll have all the stats. If you're truly interested in talking to them, just say, hey, I'm, you know.
Well, that's not that sneaky, because you probably would advertise in there anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Or
at some point.
Right? Or even better than advertising, do a joint venture with them and set them up as an affiliate. But
yeah.
I would, you know, I would just be honest. Say, hey, you know, I really love, if it's a video store, you know, magazine, hey, you know, I really love the video store industry. I know a lot of people who own video stores. I'm really passionate about it. I'm looking to start, you know, a site for video store owners. Is there any advice, anything, you know, you think I should know about, and just try to stroke their ego.
Right.
I love your magazine. You do a great job. You know, and just see. Yeah, most people are, if you approach them nice and you're not so salesy and so aggressive and you're not talking so much and annoying.
Because yeah.
Sometimes people, I know when they call me, they tend to talk so much, kind of like what I'm doing now. But, you know, just kind of ask them a lot of questions and just be genuinely interested.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good advice. Good advice. How do people get past this catch-22 of trying to stay motivated, create great content, and you know, but they only got a small group of members at the beginning, and you know, as it grows. So let's say you only got, I don't know, 50 members or something that are paying you $20 a month,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe 100 members. Let's say, you know, so what's that, $2,000 a month? Well, that might be too high. Let's say $50.
Okay.
Sorry, 50 people at you know, $20 a month, and so that's $1,000 a month. And so how do you stay motivated to create all this great content, or how do you get motivated to have a whole bunch of content in the site when they first join?
Well, obviously, you got to have content before they even join.
Right.
And I find that that's the hardest part, but that's the most fun, because you start to see your vision come into fruition and you're creating the content and you're starting to get really excited. The tough part is what you said. Once you start the site and then you let's say you don't have 1,000 members right away, or even 100 members, and you only have 50 members, and it's not growing a lot. You know, mm-hmm. there you also have to set numbers in your head ahead of time. How long are you going to give it? When are you going to pull the plug? And you have to know that. You know, almost like if you're gambling, you know, how much are you prepared to lose before you stop?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people might be happy with doing a membership site and making $1,000 a month in a passionate little niche that they love.
Right.
You know, some people might be happy with $100,000 a month. So you have to know that. And that's, you know, obviously, the key, like I said at the talk, is you when you're doing a membership site, you really do have to be passionate about it,
mm-hmm.
because if the money isn't great at the beginning, if it's a topic you don't like, it's going to really suck, because you are not going to be motivated. And I tried that years ago. You knew, I think you remember when I did that domain site. Yeah, I was like one of the first domain guys, you know, kind of just playing around with that. And I didn't, you know, I kind of found it boring. I mean, I thought it was cool. I thought it was cool a little bit, but then I'm like, this really is boring. And after a couple of months, I just lost interest, and I just kind of let the site go. But you gotta stay motivated, and, you know, at the beginning, you might have to create a lot of the content at first. And if you have other people creating the content, you just kind of – you got to stay on them, and you're hopefully finding other motivated people who just enjoy writing about this. You know, if it's a really passionate – topic, you shouldn't have a problem either creating content or having other people creating it, even if there's not a lot of members. And sometimes you might have to hype up, you know, how many members you have. Not lie, but say, hey, you know, we just started, we're growing, and, you know.
Fastest growing membership site. And
exactly. One new member a day. We are increasing by 1,000% a day.
We double every day.
Exactly.
All right, well, then the other part of the question then that you were talking about was you have to have content in there when they first join. How do you – what's the quick ways of getting that content or enough content so people feel like they're really happy in their first get in there?
Yeah. I mean, again, depending – because there's such a broad range of topics, really depending on your topic and what type of content. You know, I use as a real general rule of thumb, like 50 pieces of content, whether it's 50 articles, 30 articles – 10 video clips, 10 audio interviews, you know, depending on the length of the articles. I mean, if each article you have is 200 pages, then obviously 50 is a lot. But I would, rather than go with, you know, 10, 15, 20-page articles, in order to stretch out content, I like to break them up into smaller chunks and call them part one, part two. So if I get a 10-page article, I may break it up into, you know, three parts, a part one, a part two, and a part three. And you could also add video clips alongside that. So there are ways to kind of stretch it out, too. I lost track of what I was talking about. So that's in terms of
50 pieces.
Yeah, I would say at least 50.
So 50 when they first jump in, because that way they'll feel like they're getting something really good.
Yeah, I mean, if you start a site and you only have, you know, 10 articles,
mm-hmm.
and they're paying $20 or $10, they're not going to feel like they're like, hey, I can go to this other free site and they have 400 articles. So you got to have some bulk to it. And here's another good tip for you. At the beginning, don't have so many different categories, because if you have, you know, 20 different, you know, categories or departments,
mm-hmm.
and you only have one or two articles in each, some of the categories are going to look really thin.
Uh-huh.
It's better to have just, you know, maybe three or four categories, jam them up with content first, and then as you're growing, then you add more categories.
Okay, that's very good. So it's all about perception.
Yeah, exactly. It could be the same number, but, you know, like if you join, again, using the example of a site for video store owners, and there's 30 categories. One category is how to pick a best release, where to buy wholesale, where to do that. And each category only has one article. It looks thin. But if there's, you know, one category called, you know, marketing your business, one called, you know, inventory, and one called sales, and each one has all this bulk, it's going to make it appear much, much more robust.
So keep it pretty broad at the beginning.
Yeah, and then as you're growing, and all of a sudden you start to see you have, you know, 15 articles that relate to how to buy new releases, then you create the how to buy, you know, new release category.
Right.
And then from there, if you get more and more content, like we talked about at your mastermind group, another plug for you, we were saying that then you could start doing, you know, the vertical membership sites. If you start seeing a lot of talk on your forums about, you know, how to buy new releases, and everyone keeps talking about that, and that category is growing and growing, then you might be able to spin off a site just on that. Or not even if, let's say you don't want to do another membership site for that, then you could do an information product about that and deliver it in a different format. Maybe you can do it as a DVD set or a live seminar or an audio or a telephone seminar.
Is that where a lot of the ideas for future stuff comes from, is from the forum?
It's where all my ideas come from. That's how I created, you know, all of my spin-off sites. I never, ever envisioned doing more than one membership site. I thought I would have the one, that would be it, I'd make some good money, and I'd be able to enjoy my life. And I enjoy my life now, but, you know, I kept the first membership site with a spin-off, the business of training. You know, I just kept getting so many emails and saw all the, on the forum, everyone kept talking about, how do you do this, Ryan? How do you set up your own site? How do you make money? So I'm like, all right, well, let me spin off a site. And then I kept getting questions, you know, then on sports specific, we kept getting a lot of interest in alternative training, stone lifting, kettlebells, keg lifting, all this really cool stuff. But I didn't want to water down and upset all my members, because some of the members aren't interested in that. So I'm like, well, let me spin off that site and have one that, so just these people who are really fanatical about that can join that site. And I have people who now join, you know, 3 and 4 and 5 of my sites.
Now, when you're spinning off things, like you said, you're getting a lot of questions about the business of training and so on. So that was it, right? The business of training?
Yeah.
So then you start a new site just for that. How do you then stop providing content on the business of training in that main site and then move it all into this other one?
Yeah, because I wasn't, at the initial one, I wasn't even providing content about that.
It was just in the forum.
It was just in the forums,
it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I didn't, that wasn't the case. But the second part,
yeah,
which is an interesting question, is, yeah, what we did, we still have some content on that first site about that, but really not much at all. Like very, you know, where we used to maybe do, you know, maybe 2 articles, or maybe, let's say 3 articles a month, maybe we'd do 1 article a month on it, or maybe 1 article every other month about that specific topic. And the other site, it's all it is.
And then you might plug the other site in.
Oh, that's
one article.
Yeah, I plug it in every newsletter. What I do is it's a pretty large email newsletter, and in every newsletter I have a column, you know, called Underground Strength Coach, and I include an article or a forum post in the newsletter, plugging the other site.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, some of the spinoff sites are now doing better than the original site.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Come
on. See, yeah, I still get excited, Yannick.
That's awesome. That's let me get more excited for it. That's awesome.
Yeah. Give me 10 push-ups.
Yeah.
I once did an interview with a guy, Pavel, who's just insane. I love the guy. And during the interview, he actually made me put the phone down while I was recording it and do one-handed push-ups.
The kettlebell guy.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I know his publisher, John Duquesne.
Yeah, I know John. So he actually made me do push-ups during the interview. So
that's pretty good.
Wouldn't be out of the question. Okay.
All right, this wasn't actually on our list, but I like putting you on the spot.
I love being put on the spot.
The you know, one of the big things in membership sites is community, that we were talking about this week at the Mastermind group, and you know, that's one of the reasons that some people stay, is they love the forum, they love the community part of it, and so they'll keep paying month after month, even though they might not, you know, they might read the articles or whatever, but but the forum is maybe a big part of it. Have you done anything or know any big tips for getting more involvement? Because it seems like, I don't know, like I'll go to some websites, it might be a private site, and at one point I joined and you know, what I really liked was the forum in there, and then it died, or sometimes
yeah,
you go in there and there's like 2 posts on the forum. And so how do you get more of that going?
Well, that's a good question. You know, obviously, as you're getting more and more members, you're hoping it's more and more active. You can always try to get conversations going. Like the other day, it's rare. It never happens where I don't get any posts on my forum. But there was last week, it was like one or two slow days where there were only a couple of posts. So I just went up there and posted something about there's a sprinter, Justin Gatlin, who just set the world record. So I post that on there, and then people start talking about that.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, news. And don't be afraid of stirring up a little bit of controversy and getting controversial topics. So if it's marketing, you know, let's say it's an internet marketing site talking about, I don't know, whatever's spam or, well, not spam, whatever would be pretty controversial marketing technique.
Right.
You know, forced continuity. You know, what do you guys think? I read about this guy. What do you think about that? So, you know, getting that kind of thing going, you can. I don't do it. I know of people, though, who pay people who are well-known in the field to contribute to the forum. Say, you know, hey, I'm going to pay you. Yeah, exactly. I'll pay you, you know, $50 a week, $100 a month, or $5 a post. But, you know, I want you to go in there and generate some interest. Let's get some conversations going.
Do you also get it going in the newsletter when you drive people to the sites?
Oh, yeah. That's sometimes – here's one of my secret tips. See, I'll give you the secret tip.
Come on!
Please deposit $100 before Ryan reveals.
I would say it should be like a pay-per-call kind of thing.
That would be great, like a 900 number.
Exactly. You have to prep the code to add more money to the fund now to hear this. So anyway, see, technology, Anik. So what I do is sometimes in my newsletter, if there's a really good post, a good discussion going on, I'll actually just take that entire discussion and put it in my newsletter, and that's my featured article of the week.
Mm.
And I'll say, you know, from the files of sportspecific.com, here's what our members are talking about. And sometimes it'll be a controversial topic. Like with our sports training, it'll be a topic maybe youth training. And,
right.
You know, trainers hate when these parents are training their kids and they're pushing them and the kids are pitching, you know, 10 days in a row. So I'll talk about that and people just get fired up and they'll start emailing me. Say, hey, I can't believe the guy said that. And I'm like, hey, I didn't say it. It's in the forum. And I'll say, you know, having a link, hey, you know, if you want to join this and 6,000 other current discussions going on, become a member for just 18 cents a day. You know, so it works. So I do that a lot. And plus, on my membership sites, through MemberGate, I don't know if other systems allow you to do this, but every time there's a new post in the forum, it goes on the homepage. And you can actually see and if you go, Yannick, now to sportspecific.com,
right.
The homepage, if you look on the left under members only discussion forum, it says recent forum posts.
Yeah,
those are all titles. So as a new post goes on, so members will come, they'll see when there's a new discussion going on, and they'll click in, they'll log in just to check out what's going on.
That's cool. I like
it
that.
And once I did that, I actually noticed members probably like a 10% instant increase in membership signups I did that.
Is there a different newsletter that goes out for members or non-members?
It's funny. Initially, I was doing a newsletter for everyone, and then the members would get a private update to say, hey, the site was updated.
Mm-hmm.
And then the past 3 months, what I started doing was, like, let me just send out the newsletter just to see any difference. And when I don't send the members update, I actually notice I get more subscribers. I don't know why that is. I don't know if they were receiving too many emails from me, but I don't send the members a special email now, and I actually have more resubscribes. So I don't know why that is yet.
But you do have stuff in there for the members, like if they're a member sports specific, here's what we're talking about. If you're a member, log in, and if you're not...
Yeah, here's some new content posted to the site, you know, and here's a featured article. For more articles, click here and log in. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm always trying different ideas.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Are you paying affiliates on the monthly continuity and additional products that they buy from you?
Yes.
So they get paid on everything.
Everything. I have different products, different continuity programs. So, and sometimes I have different affiliate programs for different products. I use one shopping cart for a lot of my physical products.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually have people who are affiliates of, you know, two of my different programs. And we pay them all. You know, it's a little bit of a pain because we got to go into two different systems, but then we pay everyone each month, mostly through PayPal. If not, I just send them out a check.
Okay. So now if someone is an affiliate, they send someone over to Sports Specific, so they'll get paid monthly, and then somebody buys a product in there, that's through the One Shopping Cart?
Yeah, it's through One Shopping Cart. It actually has the capability to use the MemberGate Shopping Cart, and then that could set commissions on that. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually in the process of converting products over into both One Shopping Cart and MemberGate. So if affiliates were to do that, they'll get commission on that too if people go directly in that cart. So I'm in the process now. Actually, this morning I was working on some things of getting it so that you can buy it directly through Sports Specific site or through one of my individual sites.
Now, is that what you would recommend to people? Because there's a lot of stuff that I would do differently if I was starting from ground zero and I could have the infrastructure in place of doing it right instead of kind of the Band-Aid approach that I have now.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably have, if I did it over, I'd probably have at least the products within the site.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, but I still like to have the
individual
single page sale. Yeah, because it just sometimes if I write an article for a magazine, it's easier just to drive them to that site.
Okay.
I guess it just varies. But I could still probably use a shopping cart with MemberGate, even if I do a single page sales site. So it would probably be easy. I'm all for ease of use, and if I could have one system that could do everything,
right,
then I would do it. But
okay.
I'd already been using one shopping cart, and it was just too hard to convert everything over.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Found any good tips for getting affiliates since you're paying them on a monthly residual? Are you finding pretty easy to line up some people?
It's been pretty easy. I mean, once you become known in your niche market and you're making all these contacts with the big wigs, people come to you. Not as much to be your affiliate, but more for you to promote their program, and then they'll give you a commission.
Mm-hmm.
I have some pretty good affiliates who send me a lot of traffic.
You were mentioning, we were talking about getting into the editor of a niche publication, and you said, hey, even do a joint venture with them. Have you had success with that?
Yeah. One, actually, a really good joint venture opportunity that I have, an alliance I formed, was not necessarily, there was one magazine where it wasn't necessarily an affiliate relationship, but I did end up getting my own column in the
mm-hmm.
magazine. So I was able to have my own links, and they put me in their email newsletter as well.
And then you didn't have to give them, it wasn't an affiliate link in the article, it was just straight to your site?
It was just straight to my site, yeah. Then someone who writes for that magazine has something to do with it didn't, what you'll notice, and I guess this is kind of going off topic just for a sec, is that once you start to become really successful and people start to know your name and your niche,
yeah,
there are people who are already in your niche who might get a little jealous and resentful,
mm-hmm.
and they might try to, get you blacklisted or talk bad about you. And, I've seen it happen. There's one or two people who probably don't like what I'm doing, and
uh-huh.
I know they tried to get me off the magazine. And, that kind of – you just can't get wrapped up in the negativity and trying to then attack them. You just got to stay your course, and if you continue to provide the good content, and if you really – I know Jay Abraham says, fall in love with your customers. If you really love your customers, your clients, and you really do everything you can for them, and they know you're on their side, you're going to be successful. And it's going to separate you from all the sleazy people out there who are just trying to make a buck and trying to just put together crappy sites for $19.95 a month to get 1,000 people to make 20 grand and just providing garbage.
Right.
And I think that's why I've been successful, because people know that I do genuinely care, and I really want, if I charge $67 for a year, I'm giving them $1,000 worth of content. And they're going to tell every friggin' person they know to join the site.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah, and we're always looking for the easy way out, but, it does take a little work, and you really, truly got to care about them.
Right. Yeah, you and I are in total alignment on there. I got a thing that I look at in my planner that says that I have to provide 10 times to 100 times in value for people.
Yeah, and that's also why you've been so successful, and that's why people, pay this money to attend your seminars and why they continue to buy your products, because they know you're not going to disappoint them, and you're not going to sell garbage, and you're not there just to make a quick buck off them, and they know you genuinely care, and there's a lot of people in the industry who are not like you, unfortunately, and that's why you're the only person. I've been asked a lot to kind of get into internet marketing, because I've been doing it for a long time, but you were the first person I ever said, all right, I'll speak at the seminar.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
You're a good man, Yannick. It's, come on, everyone, round of applause for Yannick Silver.
it's a muted call.
Okay. I know. But I could hear them clapping through the mute. They're so excited.
Yeah.
I forgot what your question was anyway. I just
That was it.
Okay.
I mean, actually, you were off on a tangent, but that was fine. A couple more things, and I'll let you go. What's some of the best ways you found to get others to create content for you? Is it an ego thing? Is it a payment thing? Is it?
It's not a payment thing because I don't pay, so it's definitely not that. Although I do
Wait,
pay
would
one.
You be, would you be above? You wouldn't be.
No, I wouldn't be above pay. Actually,
yeah.
I do pay one guy now. He's actually kind of running the content. He writes a couple articles a week, and he's helping me gather content.
Uh-huh.
So I do pay for one of the sites now. It is a lot of it's ego. Like I have, you know, I started with a really good board of experts, and I actually got a call last week from a really well-known fitness guy. His assistant called me and said, "Hey, I won't mention this person's name, but
yeah.
you know, John Smith, you know, wants to know how could he get on your board of experts? You know, what could he do? What kind of content should he provide? He wants to get on there, you know." So they're coming to me.
Yeah.
So
that was it.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a guy that if I just started a site and said, "Hey, would you write for me?" He says, "No."
Right.
But you kind of flip it. All you got to do is get that one big name, and everyone else will follow, guaranteed. Because no one, you know, if there's an internet marketing site, and all of a sudden, you know, Yannick Silver's on there, like, okay. And then I call, I don't know, Armin Moore and say, hey, you know, this it's a good site. I already have Yannick. Oh, Yannick's okay, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly.
And I kind of did that, if you think about it, with my audio CD of the month, when I reformatted it, the first person I interviewed was you. And then I called Joe Vitale. I said, oh, I just interviewed Yannick Silver. Would you mind? Okay. And now I could pretty much call anyone and do an interview with them for my trainers about internet marketing. So I use you, Yannick. How do you like that?
I'm okay with it for certain people.
Yeah.
All right. One or two more quick things, and then we'll move over to Joshua. Joshua, are you there, by the way?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good.
Hey, Joshua. How you doing?
Good. How about you?
Good.
Let's see, one quick thing for you. And you kind of touched on this, and so let me know if there's anything new to add to this. And what do you think makes a unique membership site so that members can't get the same thing anywhere? I mean, you talked about the forum. You talked about access to the expert. You talked about possibly teleseminars.
Yeah. I think, again, depending on the type of niche you're going for, whether it's a business type or a hobby type, you know, if it's a business type, having lots of downloadable forms they could use, you know, checklists, worksheets, things of that nature that have a lot of value, you know, fill-in-the-blank type forms, things like that, online software tools that they could use. If it's more of a hobby, you know, pictures of other, like with our Underground Strength Coach site, we have the members, you know, sending video clips. They send in pictures of their own home gyms and the home equipment they use. So people love that kind
of
stuff.
Of themselves throwing kegs around.
I'll give you membership to say, you'll see. It is insane. I mean, people pushing, we had one guy send a video clip the other day. You just see him just pushing the Hummer around the parking lot. And they do, you know, and they do lifting like kegs and keg lifts and kettlebells and stones and just lifting logs in the backyard. It's really cool stuff. But things like that where you're getting the members involved and letting them contribute the
right.
content.
And that all builds community, too.
Yeah, and I like doing audio interviews as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm big on that.
What's your thought about print versus online only versus hybrid of both?
I like a hybrid of both. Although, in terms of spending money, I don't like to spend money anywhere. But if I were, actually, I'd spend it online because I think print can work, but I think it's too much to ask if you're going to advertise, let's say, in a magazine and then assume they're going to see the ad and then assume they're going to remember your URL or be in front of a computer. And if they're not in front of your computer, you have to assume they're going to remember your URL and then you assume they're going to have to spell it right and then you assume they're going to have to be on the computer and then remember to go to your website. So there's a lot of assumptions you have to make. So I've done some things with postcards. The response has been okay, not great. I haven't done a lot. I've done maybe two or three tests with it. I will do more tests. But you know, with the hybrid, where I write articles, that helps. And, you know, some partnerships with the catalog companies definitely help.
Okay, very good. One last question. If you were going to deposit $100 now, if let's say you were, I mean, you talked about being passionate about the niche, but let's say you are, you know, you're interested in it, but you're not super, super passionate, but you decide that you're going to partner up maybe with a content provider who really is passionate about it and is, you know, the main expert or one of the main experts in that particular niche.
Mm-hmm.
Would you do a partnership? Would you just pay them? Would you not pay them? What were you seeing that?
So they would provide the content. So it would be like a producer model.
Yeah, exactly.
So you would organize it. They would generate the content.
Yeah, you'd probably handle all the marketing and so on.
I would probably do some sort of revenue share type, you know, and then with options. I know I've spoken to Bill Myers about this in the past, you know, where you generate some sort of percentage, whether it's 50-50 or you get 60, they get 40 or 70-30.
Right.
And maybe if you hit certain financial goals, they can get more of an increase and then have an opportunity for them eventually to buy you out if that's what they're interested in. But I would do some sort of
revenue split.
Yeah, because it's hard to know how much you're going to make and start and, you know, do paying. And plus, if it's a revenue split, then it gives them more incentive to try to market and get the word out as well.
Right.
They're like, hey, I'm just making $200 a month anyway. It doesn't matter. I don't care if there's 100 members or 2 members.
Right. And I guess, of course, it would vary. Let's say if they had a list already of people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So yeah. And make sure, though, if you do a partnership, make sure the person's passionate about it. But, you know, give them, you know, you have to set it up so that you own the site. So if they don't contribute a certain number of articles,
mm-hmm.
that you have the right to then take it away and do it with someone else.
So then that person's personality couldn't be part of it.
Yeah, you don't want to make it just all about them and their personality, because then it's not sellable. You know, you always have to have an exit strategy. And if it's a membership site, and the membership site, and I think we talked about this weekend too, if the membership site is just called yannicksilver.com,
right.
and it's just your face and it's all your content and all your stuff, who the heck is going to buy it? Because if I buy yannicksilver.com, then it doesn't really have much value without Yannick Silver.
Right.
So you have to kind of think of that. You definitely see, I like to kind of interject my personality a little bit in my sites, but it's not all about me. That's why the membership site's not called ryanlee.com.
Mm-hmm.
I could have made it that, but I didn't want to. I wanted something that's sellable, and I already have interest in people buying my sites.
Yeah.
So you always have to have an exit strategy too.
Very smart.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Yannick, thank you. And can I just mention one quick thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Because we are going to be Tim Kerber and I are looking to do a multi-day seminar. About how to run your own membership site. We're going to do a 2-day in-depth from A to Z. But what we'll do is we'll just let, hopefully, Yannick, if you like it, you approve, you could just mention it to your people.
Yeah, I will definitely mention it. I talked to Tim about it this week and what you guys put together. By the way, for people that don't know, Tim is part of he's part of Membergate.
Yeah, he kind of runs it. So he's behind the scenes of, you know, 300 successful sites. He knows sites that are making, you know, $1 million a year and more.
So he really sees all this interesting stuff going on.
He knows all the stats. He knows if you're going to test with free week and then $2.95 a month versus $19.95 a month versus quarterly. He knows everything about it. He really does.
Excellent.
So if Yannick likes it, hopefully you'll hear from Yannick about that.
Yeah, so be on the lookout for that.
Be on the lookout. We're looking maybe sometime end of October, early November, probably down in Florida.
Okay.
Thanks, Yannick.
Thanks, Ryan. Talk
All
to
right.
you soon. Bye.
You got it.
Hey, Joshua, thanks for hanging out.
Yeah, no worries.
All right.
It was a good call.
Yeah, Ryan's got all kinds of great stuff to share, just like you do, and so we're going to talk about AdSense with you, and which obviously is a ever changing type topic, and we'll start with some attendee questions, and I'll get into some of my own if you don't mind.
Yeah, no worries.
What methods do you use to quickly get incoming links to build PageRank and search engine ranking?
Well, that's one of the biggest. One of the biggest processes I do, or I guess one of the largest things as far as the marketing side of things, because once you build the site, the next step is to market it, of course.
Right.
And what I do is I use a program called SEO Elite,
mm-hmm.
and it's actually kind of cool because there's a lot of different ways you can use it. But the easiest way is it will easily go out and find targeted websites which you can do reciprocal links to.
Now, is that similar to that Zeus?
yeah, it's actually it's very similar. However, I've used the Zeus Internet Marketing Robot, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
And I used that when it came out a couple of years ago, and it worked really well. But compared to that program, it's 100 times easier.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, Zeus worked good, and I used to use it on a lot of my old personal sites a while ago, and it's very time consuming compared to SEO Elite. I kind of fell in love with SEO Elite just because, I mean, you could start, you know, getting link partners within 10 minutes of starting it up.
Really? And I assume it works better in niches than it would, like, in something like internet marketing where you're getting these link requests all the time.
No, yeah, it works very well, and it just has so many features, and one of the best features that I like is you can sort the websites by page rank, and you can only link from sites that have a certain page rank. So, you know, depending on your preference, which mine is, I only like to link to sites that have a page rank of 3 or better.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do that, you know, very easily by a click of the button. You can go ahead and organize the sites, you know, by page rank and order, and you can just start getting reciprocal links, you know, from whatever page rank site you want. And it's very, very simple to use, and it's very fast. And along with that, reciprocal links are great, but one-way links are even better. And the program also allows you to, for one, it finds targeted websites, you know, that relate to whatever AdSense site you're building, and it also allows you to email the webmasters of those sites. So you can actually email them, and what I do, a little few marketing tactics I like to do, is I like to email them and just ask them for a one-way link. And you don't get a very good percentage, you know, take rate of people that just do it for you. But you'll email 100 people, and you might get, you know, maybe 10% that say, yeah, I'll post a link to you, you know, to my site, just because they're looking for other good related websites to promote. And so that's one way. You can even use it to find, you know, people who want to promote affiliate programs if you have your own affiliate program. So it actually goes way beyond just link exchanges.
And, all right, I'll put you on the spot then. How is that not spam?
It's not spam because for one, it's really targeted. I'm not just hitting up a lot of people not even related to what my, you know, business or what my website's about. So I'm actually typing in keywords, and actually it's not spam because you actually have to manually send each email out to each person. You have to like approve each site and make sure that their site is actually a viable business partner or somebody that could be a, you know, some type of partner with you.
All right, so you'll have to go check out the site,
yeah,
individually.
Yeah, comparing that to actually going and typing in Google a keyword term and actually going to each site. I mean,
right.
It finds sites for you, gives you a list, and then you just go and kind of approve them manually one by one. And so it's not the fastest thing in the world, but it's the fastest thing compared to anything else.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. So that sounds like a great tool. Okay, and that's one of the quickest ways. What's your note look like to the site owner? Is it very customized? Is it generic? Is it, you know, does it look like it comes as a form letter?
It's customized as best as I can do it, and I that's what I teach people. Don't just send stuff that's like, hey, link back to me, you know.
Right.
Try to include their name if you can. If you can find their name on the site, try to include that. At least, really, I would even recommend actually checking out the site and really making sure it's a real site that you would like to link back to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people just submit link requests and they don't ever look at the site. They're typing in a format that kind of sounds like it's a computer, you know.
Yeah.
So really, be as personal as you can. You know, you can even compliment their site, you know, or even put like a little PS or a little, hey, also I would like to say that I liked your articles section or your images section or whatever it is, just so they know, hey, this person actually really did look at my site, and you get a better return rate on people who actually, email you back.
And, you know, from the people that I've talked to that do the link exchanges, a lot of it's about reciprocation, that they'll put the link on their site first and then let them know that, hey, I have a link on your site first now, and it's almost like a psychological trigger of reciprocation. Do you do that?
Yeah, and actually that's the way SEO Elite works. I mean, for the most part, you can kind of do it both ways, but the way I use it is I will put the link on my website first, and SEO Elite kind of does it automatically for you almost. You just have to upload the file to your server.
Okay.
But it will actually go through it. It will give it the title and the description itself. It automatically emails them, and all you have to do is upload your links page. And so when they get the email and they check out, you know, your links page, the link's already there. It's already ready to go. So it's very simple for them to just approve your link, and then theirs gets uploaded. So it's
okay.
It's very simple.
But then you were saying that other part about that you want one-way links too, because it's not natural, I guess, in the search engine algorithms to only have reciprocal links all the time.
Right. Yeah.
Is that the reason you do that?
Yeah, that's a big reason why I do it. And another reason is because for most part, when you get reciprocal links, usually they're only going to be on a links page or a links section.
Yeah.
And when you're asking for one-way links, a lot of the times they'll actually put your link on their homepage. I mean, there's a lot of webmasters out there that don't really mind putting a link on, you know, on their homepage to yours without a reciprocal link. You know, a lot of people aren't that picky. So, I mean, yeah, most of the people are picky and they don't want to put links and stuff. But actually, if you, it's just a numbers game. And if you email enough people, you will find a lot of people that actually go ahead and put, you know, links on a more targeted area of their site, you know, a more trafficked area, I guess.
And you said also if you have an affiliate program, then that would be actually a perfect way to probably get one-way affiliate links.
Yeah, it's a great way of actually like asking people, hey, look, I have a great affiliate program. Here's my payout. Here's, you know, my numbers. Would you consider joining it?
Right.
And it's just a great way of getting your name out there and getting, you know, and talking to other websites that are, you know, that have kind of the same targeted content that you do. That would be a good fit. So it's a really easy way to find affiliate people, you know.
Okay, excellent. Another attendee question is they asked, how do you define quick and easy? Do you mean something providing subject-related content? How does Google decide this site is AdSense worthy? It's a pretty complicated question here. What rules must a site follow for Google to say it meets their AdSense criteria? And is there any traffic generation requirements before a site can become an AdSense site? So I guess the gist of it is, you know, we talk about these quick and easy sites that you put up. So how are they subject-related content? And then how do you make sure you get an AdSense account for it or get qualified for it?
Right. Okay, well, quick and easy to me, I always tell people I don't build ugly-looking sites, you know. I mean, really, my sites are quick and easy, and quick and easy to me would be to build a site in under a few hours. I put in a lot of stuff into my sites. I include a blog, I include an article section, I include a lot of, you know, images. It's very good, graphical.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I can build a site in under an hour, but when I'm talking to newbies and I'm getting them kind of going through the entire process, like I just walked somebody on the phone just the other day,
mm-hmm,
from basically start to finish, and I think it was in an hour and a half. And it was, of course,
wow,
me over the phone, you know, click here, do this, click here, do that. But it just, you know, goes to show you that even though with me talking to him, the site still got done in about an hour and a half. So to do 10 sites a day, once you start getting in the gist of it, you know, it takes you less than half an hour to build a site. It's easy to build 10 sites a day. So to me, quick and easy is, like I said, you know, in a few hours you get a nice, good-looking site that's actually uploaded, ready to be indexed and, you know, on the web. Subject-related content, each one of my sites are targeted around some type of keyword. And I have hundreds and hundreds of sites.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, if you really want to be in the AdSense game,
mm-hmm,
you have to have hundreds of sites. You know, 200 is a good number, but it's not enough. I really tell people, I'm like, if you really want to make some serious numbers over $10,000 a month, you should have 500 to 1,000 sites. It really is a numbers game.
And is that because certain ones drop out of the rankings?
It's because we're dealing with the internet and we're dealing with all the search engines and we're dealing with, you know, one with AdSense and getting indexed. So really, we don't have control over when our sites get indexed. You know, we don't have a magical button that we could press and it will just get, you know, indexed in one day.
Mm-hmm.
And the internet's ever changing, so it's like, yes, your sites do drop and some sites pick up and some sites don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just it's such a huge numbers game that some sites will make you, you know, $1,000 a month. Some sites will make you a few dollars a month. And it's just everything in between. So it's like the more sites you can make, you know, the higher numbers you'll become. And it's just I get a lot of questions from people asking me, you know, how much can I make if I have this, and how much can I make if I have this number of sites. And it's such a hard question to answer, just because it's like it really depends. And the best thing that you should do is just keep building sites and keep getting them out there. And, you know, once you start getting upwards of 500 to 1,000 sites, you'll really start to see big numbers happening in AdSense. But back to the question, each one of my sites is targeted around a certain keyword, and
mm-hmm,
I do pick just random keywords off the top of my head. When I'm building sites, I'm doing table lamps, desk chairs, fountain pens, you know, inkjet, you know, printers, papers. So Each site will have around 500 to 600 individual pages around that, you know, topic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just off the wall things that I can think of. I really don't go too mainstream. I don't do sites about golf, you know,
right.
because it's so hard to get anything ranked above all the other sites. I mean, there's millions and, you know, probably billions of golf sites out there. So I really like to go after kind of smaller niches. I found that it's a little bit easier to get sites ranked higher when you go after smaller niches that not everyone's going after.
And are you also considering what the AdSense payout is before you build the site?
To some extent, yes, and to some extent, no. It's, I mean, you know, from my experience, from I've talked to a lot of people, the AdSense payout on, you know, anything is about 30%, give or take, of what actually AdSense is making. So if AdSense is making $10 a click, you know, their average AdSense publisher might be making $3 a click, you know, and if it was
mm-hmm.
$1, you might be making 30 cents. As far as do I look and see exactly how much each keyword is making per click, not really.
Yeah.
Just because it's a little too time-consuming for me to go and, you know, research that much and go out and type in my keywords and research exactly how many, you know, what's the cost per click. Because, I mean, nobody, you know, you could use the Overture bid tool, and you can use the Google bid tool, or what, you know, I know Google, it's not called that, but when you're going through when you're doing
Google AdWords,
yeah, AdWords, it gives you you know, basic like how much you're paying per click and stuff like that, which gives you a good understanding. But I really don't go through the hassle of that. I'm just like, it's, you know, it's, to me, it's a numbers game. It's like, man, I, instead of doing that, instead of spending my time looking up how many, you know, how much I'm going to get paid per click, I just keep building sites. And I find out, like, I had a water bottle site. It was totally built around like water bottles, like, you know, drinking kind of like Arrowhead water bottles. And I was making over $1 a click, you know, which is very good. And I think a couple months I was making like $3 a click off water bottles. And it's just, you know, it's just random things that you don't even think you'd make any money off of them, but you're just building them just to get numbers in there. And you'll start to see, you know, big numbers. And my average CPM, my cost per 1,000, is around, you know, $60 to $80 for my advertising, you know, from what I'm making. I can't really say that it's, you know, exactly from AdSense because their terms of service doesn't allow me to.
Right.
But from general advertising on my sites, my CPM is around $60 to $80. And that's without me really researching exactly all my keywords and looking at, you know, what the cost per click is.
Okay. And then the second part of that question is about how do they qualify as a site that have a certain amount of traffic? Do they just, you know... Is it when you got to be accepted to the AdSense program, right?
Yeah, and actually, it was fairly hard when they first started AdSense a few years ago. They really actually went into your site and looked at it and said yes or no, and a lot of times it was actually no because you had to have it had been around a while, but now it's actually gotten really laxed, and you can build a site and you know, send it to them, and as far as traffic requirements, you don't have to have any. It really doesn't have to be been around but a week or two. As long as they go and they actually see kind of a good-looking, graphically-oriented site that actually looks like a well-developed site that has some good information, they'll accept it. And I've signed up a few AdSense accounts here and there, and everyone's gone through without a hitch.
And then they just use that same account for their other sites they set up, right?
Yeah, and actually I just got an email from somebody regarding that, asking me if there was a limit of sites to put under an AdSense account.
Uh-huh.
And there is none. You can have, you know, 10,000 sites under one AdSense account, and you don't got to worry about it.
Okay.
Especially the way I build my sites with my instant change scripts. I can change out my AdSense at any time. So I get questions from people asking me, well, what if my AdSense account gets banned or deleted or whatever?
Right.
You know, I could go up and sign up another account under a business name or, you know, somebody else's name, a family member's name, and instantly change all my templates using my instant change script with my new AdSense code.
Or you could even sign up for Yahoo Publisher or something.
Yeah, no, exactly, yeah. And Yahoo Publisher is paying out very well, too.
Interesting. Well, by the way, a question on that, since we mentioned it. What's your thoughts on which one of them to go with? Do you do both? Do you stick with Google mostly?
I haven't really tested out too much. I've actually just converted over a few sites to AdSense Publisher just to kind of compare the two. And right now, Yahoo's been paying out a little bit better than AdSense. So So I might, and actually I've been thinking about it, I might go ahead and switch over all my sites to Yahoo for a few weeks just to see, and just to get some bigger numbers happening. You know?
Well, I like, yeah, that script that you're talking about is pretty slick.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, it basically works the same as if you don't have an instant change script, then really what you do is to change your sites, you have to manually re-upload your pages or edit them and then re-upload them.
Right.
And the instant change script allows me to upload one file to my service domain, and then it changes, you know, changes all my sites across. So it really helps me to do testing and to, like I said, I could take out AdSense one day and put in Yahoo, and you know, vice versa.
And that is probably a question on a lot of people's minds. It's not something I had listed for our questions for today, but is there a way that people can outsource all this? So let's say they learn, either they, you know, maybe they took your workshop, or they, you know, they just go through the hard knocks of learning all this stuff themselves. Is there a way to outsource it then afterwards?
Well, yeah, anything teachable can be outsourced, you know, in my opinion. And actually, people that are taking my my membership course right now, quite a few of them have a dedicated webmaster.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the webmasters are either in-house or they're personal friends, and they pay them to basically go through my course, learn what I'm teaching, and then they build the sites for them. So, yes,
okay.
It can be completely outsourced. Like I said, anything teachable, in my opinion, can be outsourced. So either in-house or you can pay people overseas to do it. I really I like in-house people that I can actually have sit down next to me, and I can actually watch them work and making sure that they do it right.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a few problems with hiring people overseas just because it's hard to keep in contact with them. They're on different time zones. So I would actually recommend, you know, I use Craigslist.com to hire people. And you can find somebody for around $2,000 to $3,000 a month just to sit and build sites for you, if that's what you want to do.
As soon as they learn this process.
Right, yeah, and it's just a process. You know, like I said, if it's teachable, you can teach somebody else to do it. And
okay.
I believe you should. You know, once you get to a point, it's always nice to have somebody else do the work for you.
Right. All right, well, then actually this is a good time to ask this, is why do you think – A, do you really think your methods are going to continue working in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? And then two, do you think AdSense or, you know, contextual advertising is really a viable business?
Let's see, the first one. Will my methods continue working?
Yeah.
I believe yes, and I believe no, because you have to keep changing things. So a lot of my methods, reciprocal links are always going to be good. You know,
mm-hmm.
getting one-way links are always going to be good. I don't think that's ever going to change. Really, content sites, where are they going to be in 3 years from now? I can't say exactly, but a lot of the methods I teach as far as marketing your sites, I really don't think will ever change, just because a lot of the things, you know, like links, they can't ever change that. They can't ever ban sites for getting links.
Right.
You know, it's like you must have links.
That's the whole you know, big picture of the internet, really.
Right, you know, and if you're adding content from, like I add content to my sites from a couple places, but mostly it's from reprint sources, you know, like you get free reprint articles.
Right.
And go ahead and post content. And, you know, the search engines can't stop that either. You know, they can't stop people from posting other people's content. You know, now we have RSS, and now we have all these news sites that are just reposting news content all over the board. So it's like, I've started to do, you know, like my tactics are like white hat. They're very good. The search engines accept them. And I don't believe they're going to change from, you know, 3 years from now. However, I can't say in general how the content site arena will change. But I believe if you use kind of white hat, good search engine optimization marketing techniques, that's not going to change. And because these work for any site, whether it's a content site, membership site, a personally owned site, I really teach, you know, like marketing tactics for any site. So I don't think those will change.
Okay.
And is AdSense a viable business? Yes, it is. However, I don't think you should put all your eggs in one basket.
Right.
I don't think you should just build AdSense sites and that's your sole, your sole income is just AdSense. That's why I do a lot of different things. And the biggest things I do is mailing lists. On all of my sites, I have a subscriber form, in which I get subscribers to, you know, various newsletters that I have, and I can promote other products. Because no matter what, if AdSense went down yesterday, you know, today,
yeah.
I would still have my list that I personally own myself. You know, nobody can take those away from me. And I could email those people whenever I want. I can, you know, promote affiliate programs. I could even start my own programs and that's never going to die, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely a big deal. Let's talk about that for a second, if we could, Josh. You got, you know, like you said, you go random stuff like desk lamps or desk chairs and water bottles and all this stuff. So you got email signups on each of those pages. I assume they're not getting the same newsletter, right?
Yeah, and what I do is I have my sites kind of broken up in groups of like 20 to 30 sites. And I get this question a lot too. Is, you know, how do you target sites? How do you, you know, put up a subscriber form and target, you know,
right,
certain type of people? And for the most part, I really don't. I'm just getting such high numbers. It's you know, if you get 1,000 people to visit your sites a day, you know, 100 of those people will subscribe to whatever you're putting up there. You know, might be lower, might be higher. I do have different groups of sites. So if I have 10 groups of sites, I can put on 10 different, you know, autoresponders or subscriber forms to those 10 different groups. And I really, like I said, I don't, a lot of this stuff I could be doing, like I could go ahead and build, you know, 20 or 30 or even 100 sites that I'll target the same type of category.
Right.
And then I could put up a subscriber form on those 100 sites and
right,
target around whatever that niche is.
Right.
And that's something that, you know, I teach people that they can do. But personally, I just build so many sites and they're around so many different, you know, topics. I really don't go in and just build, you know, a complete, you know, bulk, you know, sites around one category. So, yes, my subscriber forms aren't very targeted to, you know, every site that they're up on. However, it is a numbers game, and I do get subscribers every single day from all of them, you know, and yeah, it's really just a numbers game. If you get a certain amount of people, you will get subscribers to any list you put up.
Right. So now you said it's, what, about 10, 20 categories? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay. So then do you, like, let's say water bottles that might fit under, I don't know, fitness category. Then do you have a newsletter related to fitness? Is that the way it works? Or do they get the choice of subscribing to those different categories?
Well, okay, I might have, like, for one group of sites – really, none of them are actually in a certain category. They're all just, when I say group of sites, I'm actually grouping them just by numbers, like 20 sites.
Oh, I see. 20 sites
would be one group. So actually, I could have, you know, for one group, I could have water bottles, playing cards, computers.
Okay.
You know, so they're very all random and different.
Okay. So the newsletter is really generic. It's just sign up for updates or?
Yeah, well, when I build newsletters, I do actually build them around a topic. So I do have an internet marketing list I build. I do have one on other various affiliate programs. But, you know, like for my internet marketing one, it's, you know, learn how to start your own you know, internet-based business.
Right.
Name and email. So you could do that for, you know, any affiliate program. You go to clickbank.com, find a
right,
good affiliate program and say, hey, okay, you know, I want to promote a, you know, how to have a better marriage, you know, how to have a better marriage, you know, sign up here. And just
okay,
put those into those lists.
And then
so
that's
then,
all autoresponder selling affiliate products probably.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really when you get to the kind of affiliate marketing side of things.
Yeah.
So that's how I do it. But are they really targeted, you know, on every site? No. They could be. I just haven't done it just because, you know, it's just I don't build, you know, when I'm actually creating sites, I don't actually, you know, I don't buy 20 or, you know, 30 domains around one kind of category. They're
right,
all kind of random, so.
Okay.
However, you know, I teach people, I'm like, you know, you can do it that way. That's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Personally, I just don't.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense there. And then are you providing content to in the newsletter, same kind of deal that you're reprinting content from somewhere else mostly?
Yeah, I will either partner up with somebody, you know, I'll go to the actual affiliate program I'm promoting and go, hey, can you give me, you know, maybe your autoresponder list, or can you write me, you know, a set of autoresponders?
Very smart.
And, so, you know, a lot of times they'll go, yeah, because, you know, I'm going to be giving them those
yeah,
contacts just on a daily basis. And so a lot of them will be like, heck yeah, and they'll do it right away. Sometimes they won't, and depending on if it's a, you know, good, really good affiliate program I want to promote, I'll go ahead and just write a few myself and either direct them to the sales page. Sometimes I don't even really do affiliate programs. I'll just direct them to another page on my AdSense site with Google AdSense.
Yep, you're just recycling
it. You know, yeah, recycling traffic. Do you want to learn more about this, you know, topic? You're on my site. Click here, name and email. And, you know, every week they'll get a little notice. Maybe, you know, I'll post an article. And
yeah,
like, you know, check out the article, and on the article page, there'll be some AdSense there. So it's just recycling traffic, recycling those people that have, you know, already made me money.
I like that. That's great. Let's talk about, you ever buy traffic for your AdSense sites, or is it all free SEO stuff?
I have not actually bought traffic from my AdSense stuff. You can, and I've talked to a few people who have, but personally I haven't. I just really haven't gotten into that model of buying traffic. It's a little bit more research, especially if you're doing like Google arbitrage, where you're actually paying for clicks on Google and sending them to an AdSense site. But I don't. I really like the free SEO stuff.
Okay. So the free stuff and the linking but you could do it if you had maybe deeper pockets or just wanted to test it out.
Yeah, I could do it. I mean, I could do it right now. I just actually there's a good buddy I just met. His name's Adam, and he does a lot of pay-per-click stuff.
Right.
But for me, I don't really know pay-per-click numbers. I've really never messed with it. I've really never paid for traffic to any of my sites.
Right.
Just because I have a huge list of these content sites that I use to promote all my other sites. So it's like whenever I want to get traffic to my other sites, instead of paying for it, on Google or Yahoo or whatever it is, I'll go ahead and put up a pop under on all my sites, or I'll go ahead and put up a subscriber form, or I'll put up an affiliate banner, to one of my own products. So I've just really never done it, just because I've kind of never had to almost,
Yeah.
I'm already getting such large amounts of traffic from my content sites that I kind of use those to promote my stuff, and I just really never paid for it. But you totally can. It's just researching. You got to research, how much money you're making per click on an AdSense site, then what your cost is per click,
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to make more money, than what you're paying, that's just that's just the way business works. So yeah, it's totally possible. But just for me, I've kind of always used my own network to promote things.
Right. Yeah. Once you start building out, like you said, 100, 200, 500,000 sites, it's pretty easy to start driving or recycling some of that traffic to your other network of sites, right?
Yeah, and it's just, it's just virtual real estate. Once you get 1,000 sites,
mm-hmm.
And they all have, 500 pages or even 1,000 pages per site, the numbers are just huge. And it's just a matter of time before people actually start finding your pages on the search engines.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you're across thousands and thousands and thousands of different topics and different keywords and different terms, it really is just a matter of time before people will actually start finding your sites. And once that happens, that's when you start to see the advertising come in. So it's, when you have 1,000 sites and you can just multiply that number by 1,000 pages, and it's just huge,
Interesting. Okay, I think that's pretty much all I have. I know you made an offer at the event. I assume that is probably over now, right?
Yeah. However, I do have a few spots open. The exact offer I made at the event, I cannot do that anymore just because I told the people I would not. I'm going to respect that.
Okay.
So, I do have some more seats open just because a few people dropped out of kind of had money troubles. It was totally fine. I told them they could, gave them a full refund.
Right.
It's totally fine. However, so I do have a few spots open. And if people want to either email me, they want to go to the site, adsenseyounggun.com. They can email me, talk with me if they have any questions, and
yeah, see if it's right for them.
Yeah, so
okay,
I really am open to working with people. But like I said, first email me and talk with me, and I really want to see, I'll get on the phone with you personally if you want, and I can, talk to you and see if it's right for you.
Okay, yeah, sounds very fair. So if you want to learn about how to do AdSense with Joshua, you can check that out at AdSenseYoungGun.com. I think, since we process for you, I think if I'm not mistaken, I believe there's three spots that got dropped.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I think that's probably in that general realm, three or four. Okay, excellent. Hey, great info today and great info in March in D.C. Really, really appreciate you taking the extra time and us going over today.
Yeah, no problem. I'm actually happy to be on the call. It's exciting to get back and talking about it again.
Yeah, it's very cool. Actually, as you're talking about it, I've never really thought that much about AdSense, but as you're talking about it, it seems so exciting. Just the different things going on, and my mind is going like a mile a minute about the AdSense stuff and recycling the traffic. And
yeah, it's so fun because you start to realize how much more you can do with just a site,
Right. Yeah, that's very amazing. All right, very cool. I will. I'll talk to you soon, and I'll talk to everybody else shortly next week. We have our last call, fourth in the series, and I also will be emailing you with details on our copywriting call and also about Len Crichter, the eBay guy. So look out for that, and check out AdSenseYoungGun.com for Joshua's stuff. Thanks, Joshua.
All right. Thanks again.
Talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
Bye.